Eaton's at third. Kowser makes the catch. Nate is coming home. Throw is wide. He stops, and he will not score. What in the world? Obviously, hindsight 2020. I know you got Bregman up. I'd have been tempted there. He's under it. He makes the play. And that is one of the toughest losses of the season. And that happened way too often in this homestand. A nightmare for the Red Sox.
This is WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
It is literally a gray day in Red Sox Nation, but not here in the studios of WEEI Afternoons in Brighton, powered by Verizon. Fitzy, Andy here. Still basking in the glow of what was an unbelievable two-day event, the 23rd annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Telethon, which, if you haven't heard by now, set the record, and didn't really set the record, Fitzy, as much as obliterated the previous record from 2008.
Annihilated it.
4.9 million, it. Right? We wanted to get to 5 million. Then we wanted to get... We ended up at 5,760,393.
Ooh-wee.
Absolutely blew away the record, and it's thanks to everyone. It's thanks to the doctors, the patients, the families, the stories, but obviously, most importantly, thanks to you, the listeners. Those of you, I think it was over 9,000 different donations. I heard Tom Caron, the co-chair, mention on Nesson
from
last
different
night.
Different listeners, different callers, yep. Viewers of Nesson, yep. Listeners of EEI. Andy,
huge.
If I may, I'd like to shout out one who called in last night around 6:05. He wanted to call in and make the donation during our show, but was just a little late to it. My pal Vinny, who is a season ticket member for the New England Patriots for over 30 years, runs VHS Transportation out of Holbrook, Mass. He himself just recently went into remission after being diagnosed in his 70s with cancer, sought care at Dana-Farber down in Weymouth, $5,000 donation, and he wanted everyone to know that he listens every day to WEEI Afternoons, and he made the donation thanks to Dana-Farber, but also wanted to shout us out in the process. So thank you, Vin, one of many people who donated on the way to over $5.7 million.
Actually, it's been updated right before my eyes in the document. It's $5.760 million, $244. Read that weird, so I'll say it again. $5,760,244 for the Jimmy Fund, for Dana-Farber. And as we talked to a lot of the doctors yesterday and the patients, the research and the funding that is now in jeopardy because of changes and things going on in the economy, the federal government, and all that. Those dollars will be put to good use. And I just have to say, from a personal perspective, without a doubt, the two most rewarding days of my career. And I know that's probably not a surprise.
What kind of career you had, Hart? What have you ever accomplished?
Well, no one's saying that, actually. We've both done plenty of things that we could hang hats of various sizes on.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that. You know, we've done radio and TV and Super Bowls and interviews and superstars and all of that. But yesterday, Monday... just unbelievable talking to the families and the children and the doctors with so much hope, so many great stories. It truly was awesome. But again, it would just be us talking if it weren't for the listeners, them picking up their phones, their computers, ponying up to come up with $5.7+ million. And it is interesting, Fitzy. I'm not sure if you're aware that today is actually National Radio Day. We're celebrating the 105th anniversary of radio. And
good old Tesla.
I think it's pretty cool that a radio telethon just generated $5.7 million. So whatever you've heard about radio, it is still as
not
powerful.
Not dead yet.
Not at all. It's as powerful as ever. In fact, because you can now listen in your car, on your phone, on your app, on your smart speaker, wherever you may be, it's probably gaining power in terms of the reach of radio. And $5.7 million says it all. So I just want to thank our listeners, our sponsors, our friends at Arbella, BJ's, Rob Hale, everyone, because that was an amazing couple days. Now, I also am a competitor. I told you this, Fitzy. The one thing that
you
worries
me. You don't have to tell me. I know that.
The one thing that worries me is what now, Fitzy?
And now we have to get over six next year.
Yes, 6 million is now the goal for next year. And I'm like, oh my God.
That's fine.
I feel like Santa Claus.
Andy, what are we without goals? What are we without, you know, heights we want to achieve? You know, finish lines to cross. You know, this is great. Now we've got 360 something days to get to work on making sure that we reach that, if not get past it. Also, not to bury the lead, Andy, you realize that with Rob Hales' $1 million donation match on day one, that took us well over $2 million before the first of two incredibly frustrating Red Sox losses to the Baltimore Orioles happened. Do you know, even without the Rob Hale match, this would have been the second highest Jimmy Fund?
That's how
generous the good people of WEEI, Nesson viewership, and Red Sox Nation were.
Okay, so you just touched on it. So there goes the fun. We've talked about the good things, right, the great things, the fun things.
Well, it's kind of like we have I felt like this opening segment, Andy, was going to be the good, the bad, and the ugly. We just celebrated the good.
Yeah,
the good. Thank you all.
The good. Now we have to get the bad and the ugly. The Boston Red Sox. Yeah. I will say the one thing that's a little bit misrepresented here is the Orioles suck for the season. The Orioles of late don't suck. The Orioles have now won three straight series against the Mariners, you, and another playoff team. And
might have been the Yankees.
I think it was the Yankees. So the Mariners, the Yankees, and the Red Sox. What are those teams?
Because they got rid of everybody, and they're playing the most carefree baseball they can. Like, we got nothing to lose.
Yeah, maybe the Red Sox should try that, because whatever they're doing ain't working. They are scuffling. When you... we've talked a lot, and we heard Will Fleming's final call there. We've talked about the highs and the lows of this team. This is a roller coaster baseball team with some great Friday night Fenway walk-offs, some of the most exciting baseball you will see. And then there's games like last night that make you question, do I even want to watch baseball? Why am I on my couch at 9:45 at night watching a team that loads the bases with nobody out and then proceeds to strike out 1, 2, 3, not time for the three-point stance. Nope, I'm counting the strikeouts. Nope. Three straight times against a guy who's been waived, DFA'd, cut, whatever the hell they call it in baseball, three times this season. How does that happen, Nick Fitzy-Stevens?
I don't understand how you strike out three times in an inning against this guy who is, I don't know, pick your, you know, old crusty sports fan descriptive here, a stiff, a bum, a has-been.
Why can't we get stiffs like that in our bullpen?
Because we do get stiffs in our bullpen that blow it when we're up 7-0, 7-1, force Chapman into a game. And look at the chain reaction of that one botched win on Saturday evening against the Marlins. You got to bring Chapman in. Then you can't use him on Sunday. Then you tax the bullpen too much over the weekend. Then the bullpen stinks, and they can't bail you out for
then
over
the
two
bullpen
games.
Stinks. I like that detail. Then the bullpen stinks.
And now the bullpen stinks even more than they stank before. Now they don't just stink. Now they smell. And like now they're just now borderline rotting at this point. But how in the world the Red Sox, three straight innings, you have the bases loaded?
How many runs did they score with the bases loaded, three straight innings? Yeah, let me guess. Let's see, three innings, bases loaded. You should get at least one per inning, and then two and one.
Then throw an, you know what? So throw an extra on there because you're feeling charitable with the Jimmy Fund.
Six runs.
Okay. Six minus two, minus three, minus one is how much?
That would be zero.
That's correct.
And you lose. The Red Sox lose. The Red Sox lose. One run loss, right?
Oh, I'm going to tell you, at the end of the season, if the Red Sox can go to, like, at the arcade when you take all your tickets and you exchange it for, like, one of those guns that shoots, like, the suction cups or maybe a stuffed animal or a piggy bank, if the Red Sox could take all of those one-run losses and cash them in at the end of the season, they'll still get nothing.
24th one-run loss.
That, you know what?
Seems like a lot.
Way to go. That is something special. That is really... I was so freaking frustrated last night, and you probably saw, Andy, the litany, just the hot run of Sox fans, every Sox account, just worst loss of the season. How do you lose that game? Most frustrating loss.
I agree.
If we don't make the postseason, this is the one that's going to hang over my head like a stink cloud all fall long.
Well, because it was classic. in that it included some of the things we talk about. Bullpen, blowing things. Starting pitcher, not being great. Walker Buehler wasn't even as good as his numbers. It was a struggle fest from day one, minute one. You had base running questions slash, is it a base running question with Eaton not tagging up, or is it some scouting pregame decision question that I can blame on analytics and Dan Ball just put his headset on because I think he knew where I was going? Because that's who I'm blaming right now. I don't know if Alex Cora was kind of trying to save face or protect someone, but in doing so, he put analytics in the... Wait, you made a decision for crunch time on an iPad at a 2 o'clock meeting in the in the afternoon? What the hell are we doing?
Am I the only one that didn't believe that?
I kind of didn't believe it, but I'm trying to take him at his word first. Let's go superficial first.
Sure.
If he's right, and in their scouting report they said that's a, how did he describe the bad arm that I saw with my own eyes as not being good? He had some word for it. A great arm, a dangerous arm, whatever.
Yeah.
We weren't going to challenge it. Okay, so you made that decision before the game started, unfolded, played out, anything. We just made. So, again, this gets back to one of those where I become critical of him in a way. Why do I need Alex Cora? If I made that decision on an iPad at 2 p.m. in a meeting, what do I need the manager for?
I think it's a little bit different. I would guess because they pinch ran Eaton to start that inning, I would guess they made that decision before the inning started. We're going to bunt him over to third with Connor Wong, and then if you hit it to the outfield, if he hits it to center at a certain depth, he's not running if you hit it. But so I would guess they had the discussion before the inning.
So this is Fenway Park that was already electric for a portion of the night. The crowd showing yet again they want to be into the game. They want to be a factor. When Nathaniel Lowe hits the home run, you got the lights flashing. It's like great. You know, it was a little Drake May moment there against Tennessee. That home run would have been really cool if it was a walk-off and not a game tying, and then you go on to blow the game afterwards. Little Drake May-esque finish there. But they wanted to be involved, right? Chapman's out there. They're on the edge of their seats. They're standing up. There's buzz in Fenway Park. In that environment, and you have a fastest guy on the team, right? Eaton?
Mm-hmm. I believe Nate Eaton? Yep.
Yes, he's faster one of the fastest guys in the league.
Yeah, fastest guy. He's on third base in a raucous environment. I don't know. The theory of, like, let's put some pressure on the center fielder, the catcher, like, let's make them make a play. Because in my mind, it's more likely in that environment that they don't make a play, that your fast guy beats the ball to the plate. I don't care what your stupid scouting report says.
So the number that's been floating around Twitter is Nate Eaton is 95th percentile in terms of speed, so one of the fastest guys in the league, 95 out of 100.
Fast.
And Colton Cowser has the 95th percentile arm, so he is 95 out of 100 in terms of arm strength. So theoretically,
I thought he was one of the weaker arms.
No, it is one of the stronger arms.
It just looked
arms.
It.
Yeah, it's one of the stronger arms making a terrible throw in crunch time, which, to your point, is why maybe we give this guy a chance. Because, again, at that point, you're 0-for-12 with runners in scoring position, something like that. You're
13
not,
was coming.
You're not, exactly, because you're not having a good day. That's the kind of situational thing that I feel like they didn't take into account.
I'll also add something in there that I hate, but is now a factor in Major League Baseball. Every time I see one of these plays at the plate, the first thing you hear the color guy on the broadcast say, well, we got to look to see if he was blocking the plate, see if they might want to challenge that. Right. So you could get thrown out and maybe even try to use some stupid loophole rule to have a walk-off weird win kind of situation. So the fact that this decision was made beforehand, okay, that's what Alex Cora said. Now, what do we think really happened? Was the decision made beforehand, or was this a case of him being what he is great at, the human shield, defending the organization, his players, whoever? Was he defending Kyle Hudson, the third base coach? Was he defending Eaton? Because if we go back and listen to the audio that Stiz played coming in, Will Fleming was like, and Eaton's coming home. Hey, Eaton, I said Eaton's coming home, and he didn't. Like, nope. He thought it was a foregone conclusion that he was coming home, and at least visually, whatever.
You got to do something to wake that offense up after the last couple of innings when you've had the three straight innings where you have the bases loaded. Like, you need to take any and every chance you can. And yes, Bregman coming up next obviously factored into the calculus as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't that deep, and I'm sure Roman Anthony went to bed last night like, ugh, I just got under it a little too much. Like, if he hit it 10 feet further, he scores.
Or if Nick Eaton just runs, he score. Game over. I saw the throw.
No, game tied. That would have tied the game.
Oh, yeah. Tied the game. But, like, the idea that decision was made. So, Do we believe he was protecting someone? And if so, who's he protecting? Who's the easiest person to point the finger at?
I think he was kind of, I won't say protecting himself.
Oh.
If anything, he's definitely protecting his third base coach, because Alex Cora is not the type of manager to just throw another position coach under the bus and say, well, I told him to go, you know, because we got a good baseball team.
Dan Ball, what are you?
You know, here's this. Nope. I think he absolutely was protecting it. He was sticking to the game plan, and he was definitely protecting the third base coach.
I'm in lockstep with Fitzy in that I think he was protecting Hudson, because going back and looking at the replay, Nate Eaton was running full speed, head down off the bag, and then you could see Hudson right next to him in his ear, after which he turns his head to the left, sees what's going on, and then stops. So I think Kyle Hudson was going, go, 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 stop, and that's what ended up kind of screwing the play over. So I think he was defending his coach's instinct in saying, no, don't go, because it looked like Nate Eaton wanted to score.
Well, yeah, and it looked like Will Fleming wanted him to score, and I'm pretty sure virtually every fan in Red Sox Nation wanted him to score, and he didn't score. But I'll get back to it. This is a classic, in some sense, Red Sox loss. One run, extra innings, bullpen stinks, starting pitching not good enough, your bullpen is being put in tough spots, base running is questionable. Oh, and should I also include strikeouts? Let's see. You load the bases, and you struck out again. It's actually only 8 for the game. I would say some of them, though, were, how would you say this, critical, timely, important. Mm-hmm.
Should count for 2?
Yes, should be doubled up. You cannot strike out 3 straight times with the bases loaded. Bases loaded, no outs. And I know they loaded the bases again and again, but to me, that was the most frustrating one, because you have the chance to not get to all this other crap. If you do your job with the bases loaded and nobody out, all this other stuff never happens, never comes to fruition. So this is an infuriating loss for the Boston Red Sox. 617-779-7937 if you want to react to what went on last night. Fitzy, are you mad, sad, disappointed, or is there any reservation setting in where you might be like, wait, what month is it? Oh, it's August? Wait, don't the Red Sox usually do this in August after teasing us for a while, fall apart, have a losing record, and then we start questioning what Cora's doing? Isn't that how August works in Red Sox Nation, Fitzy?
Are you asking me like what, not just what kind of fan, but what kind of parent I am at this point? Like,
yeah.
You know, like your kids have probably come through the door and you're like, I'm more disappointed than I am mad.
Yeah.
You should have used your better judgment.
Yeah. So are you disappointed? You mad? You accepting?
I'm actually a little bit sad after last night.
Sad.
I am. You want to know why? Because I feel like we haven't even gotten into this yet, but we have the Jaron Duran outburst, which sort of speaks to people in the dugout becoming a bit unglued, unhinged, or basically losing their discipline and focus. You've got the inability to come through in the clutch. You've got cascading mistakes made through the weekend that pay off later in the week and cost you games that you need to win. Sure, you're still in the wild card hunt. You absolutely have a playoff spot if they start tomorrow. Here's the thing. They don't. You got a little under a month and a half left to play. And now the Red Sox have to, and I know we were updating different tote boards yesterday for a greater good and cause, Dan Ball, but now the Red Sox need to go 24-11. To reach the 92-70 plateau, which is starting to seem pretty difficult considering Seydon Rafaela hasn't had a home run since before the All-Star break. Abraham Toro couldn't hit the side of a barn with a barn door. And the offense is completely falling apart.
But you missed somebody. Whoa, you missed somebody. If we're gonna pull people out to kind of scapegoat, you have an $18 million designated hitter.
Oh, platoon guy.
He stinks. I mean, you give him you know those big red bats that you use when the kids are little so that it's easier for them? I think you give him one of those, he would still,
but they're like,
they're
plastic and you buy them at Ocean State Job Lot or Shaw's. Yeah.
They crack and you have to buy another one in a week and that whole thing. He is, if we're going to start listing guys, and I know Rafaela's got the night off and then he gets the day off today. They kind of want him to reset. There's talent there. We know that he can go on a run.
Sure.
What's Yoshida do for this baseball team?
Yeah, he officially needs a visit with the Bobs. What would you say you do here?
You know what he actually does? Forces me to watch games where players I want playing aren't playing because they feel like they have this rotation of guys. The other guys in the rotation I want to play. Rafaela, I don't care about the streak that's gone downward. I saw the pre-All-Star game high streak, what he can do when he's rolling and riding high. Obviously, Anthony and Willier Abreu and Jarren Duran, I want to see those guys play. Yoshida, there has never been once, ever, and I know people will say he's a nice guy and he's got great running
form. He had a big home
run
at Yankee Stadium. What was it, last year or the year before? Like, he's had a clutch hit.
Oh, so we're going with one home run from last year as why he should play this year?
No, I was just saying, like, if you were gonna wander into, this guy's never done a damn thing for us. Like, man,
I'm gonna say never, even though you can bring up one example.
Hit a big home run.
I'm a big believer. If you're gonna prove a point, you need three examples. Give me the three biggest plays of Yoshida's career. Go ahead. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Really, I'm not allowed to do that.
No, you're not allowed to do that. No, so here's actually a little theory I was working on earlier today. This is not my three-point stance. That's going to be football-related when we get to the 3 o'clock hour. But, Andy, I think the Red Sox are sneaky missing Marcelo Meyer more than we can possibly sort of cop to, or like his injury, which is causing him now to miss the rest of the season, surgery, 3+ months to recover, etc. By not being able to play him at second and leaving Rafaela in center, the fallout from this now is you're seeing Yoshida more. Rafaela has gone straight to the tank, offensively speaking, since he's had to go to second base. There's like a whole you're a big like butterfly effect sliding doors type of guy.
Absolutely.
I hate to say it, the Meyer injury coming in under the radar, sneaky bigger than we anticipated.
Wow, you even got a three-point stance buzzer.
Thank
there.
You, Stanley.
Something that Ted has never heard. I wonder what he's listening in his car. He's like, what's that? I've never heard that before. I would like to poo-poo that, but if we're going to say Mookie Betts is having the worst year of his career because he has to play shortstop, why can't I say that Rafaela took an offensive downward spiral when he had to play middle infield, right? Yep. I know it's not the exact same, but it's still going from the outfield to middle infield, and if that is theoretically more stressful, more wear and tear, whatever you want to call it, then I agree with you. And I know Marcelo Meyer was actually there yesterday. I saw him playing catch left-handed, and he clearly is trying to still be an emotional, young factor vibe guy with the team. But you're right. His not being available to actually play baseball at this point could have had a domino effect that is adversely affecting this baseball team. 617-779-7937. We're reacting to, yet again, the worst loss of the season for the Boston Red Sox. The good news is today is a day off. The bad news is they're headed to New York to take on the Yankees. The Yankees that they look powerful right now, literally and figuratively. We'll tell you what they did last night. While the Red Sox were falling on their faces, the Yankees were kind of lighting it up and looking impressive as they get ready for this four-game series. A huge one. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.